You're listening to Wins Above Fantasy, part of the Pitcherless Podcast Network, with Van Burnett and Steve Gisuelli.
Welcome back, everybody. It is Wins Above Fantasy, episode 221. I'm Van Burnett, joined as always by Steve Gisuelli. We are back after our own little all-star break. Hope you guys, could take a deep breath, but it is always like you get the, the phantom lineup check and you're like, what? I got no stats. It's like a little bit of a shock of what's not too far away, which is the end of the year. And that's kind of the impetus for this show, Steve, is in preparation for the home stretch of fantasy leagues. I know some head-to-head leagues wind down a little bit quicker, obviously, than roto settings. Mine are like 3 or 4 weeks away. I think you're a couple weeks behind me, but this is an annual show at this point for the WAF listeners, where we look at strength of schedule the rest of season to find an edge on the teams that have the lightest schedules in terms of winning percentage, just basically as rudimentary as research gets, trying to find who's got soft calendars for the rest of August and September. While it's a basic exercise, I know this is one that years back, Nick kind of commented in the offseason, was like, it is very underrated to look at matchups down the home stretch. And I know we were talking offline, Steve, it's always a show that even if you have to kind of throw up every smart under the hood, stat cast, expected stats, if you throw that all out, sometimes you're just like, well, you know, this guy could get hot. And it's happened, I don't want to say more often than not, but every year it seems like we get to August and September and you see a Dansby Swanson, or years back an Eloy Jimenez, or the list goes on. A lot of times it's been AL Central teams because of the weak divisions, but it is definitely a show where you look at something that a lot of people aren't thinking about, which is what makes it a fun topic. So we got nine teams. So it's kind of a nine inning theme that we're going to be breaking down, and can't wait to get into it, but it's going to be back after a couple weeks of a break. How's it going out there, Steve? Happy dog days of summer.
Yeah, it's good to be back. Yeah. We did like a little, you know, the starter who doesn't start around the all-star break. It's like a fake IL stint, right?
Load management.
Yeah. And we'll come back with one of, this is a hallmark show for us for sure. And it's funny, as we were doing prep for the show, I was just thinking to myself, it's like, we wait these first, month of the season for all these stats to stabilize and wait for, signal and all the noise for all of the metrics that we love and talk about ad nauseum, and rightfully so, they're great. And then basically once we're in the thick of it and, in the dog days of summer, like you said, you kind of just throw all that out the window and can just look, all right, who's been hot the last 30 days and who's got some good schedules coming up. And it is underrated. It's underrated for the early part of the season. I know Nick focuses on that a lot, for starting pitcher schedules, but it's also a little bit tougher to do in the early season because you don't know like what surprise teams are good yet, what teams aren't good that you thought were locked to be good, right? The last 2 years you spent July and August streaming against the White Sox. Like I literally won a home league title in 2024 because two or three of my pitching slots were just streamers, no matter who they were, versus the White Sox. And that was a big reason, was because we did this show and broke down those teams that had a lot of games versus the White Sox. That's not the case anymore, right? Like you're right. You don't want to stream against the White Sox. Like their offense is good. Same with the Pirates, right? Like the Pirates have what, like the third best WRC plus in baseball, and maybe even better than that. Yeah. They have Emerson Valdez, who was Aristides Aquino on, spot times on 10. Yeah. You don't want to stream against those teams. Okay. So now we need to find different teams to do that against. And that's hard to tell really at any point, right? Cause these things can come in trends.
Very true. But, and this year, I will say, doesn't it feel, we'll get into it and talk about like the worst hitting teams by, you know, OPS and everything. But it's like this year, it feels a little bit strange that some of the teams that historically have been reliable offenses are the ones that have been struggling. You know what I mean?
There's not low hanging fruit. There isn't the White Sox. There isn't the Pirates.
Right.
You know, there's Colorado, but then, you know, facing Colorado at home, that's not good. And like, you know, they have Hunter Goodman, like they actually have some pieces and they're starting to do some things. Like I could see them sort of going maybe a little bit slower than the White Sox have, but I could see them, you know, starting to come up on the, you know, out of that abyss that they've been in forever with that new management that they have there. So,
yep.
You know, it's important to do it because like you said, it is the home stretch. You're fighting for your playoff lives and head to head right now. You're trying to scrape every single category because time is limited. So you have to react on these small samples. I know John PGH on Twitter has a great, you know, scraper and bot that he puts out, and it's like puts out schedules versus the team's last 30 days. I think we talk about this every single time. We do this show, like he puts out, it's like an automated tweet of what pitchers are facing the teams with the lowest OPS over the last 30 days for the next week. Mm-hmm. What offenses are facing, you know, the pitchers with the worst, you know, I forget what stat he uses, like expected WOBA or something like that. Mm-hmm. It's just an underrated thing to look at as far as the matchups go, just because you really don't think about that in baseball as much like you do in like football, because it's like such a small sample weekly basis type of thing, but it's important and it's uncovered some gems for us, so hopefully we can do that here this episode.
Love it. Yeah. And for us, the way we kind of saw, I mean, historically we've just pulled from Tankathon to look at winning percentage in the teams with the most matchups, so because it's based on winning percentage, we also want to note the worst hitting teams, the worst pitching teams, at least from a season line. It's not like past 30 days or anything. But the structure of the show is going to be a little bit different because we got a lot of teams and schedules to go through. And then after we talk about their schedules and kind of the run rates of like what, you know, this team has a super soft schedule middle of August, like keep that in the back of your mind. We'll briefly hit on the batters worth targeting, the pitchers worth targeting, and some of them might be more watch list again, but it's just good to have in the back pocket. I guess to jump into the actual teams first, listing from Tankathon the top 10 easiest schedules. Easiest on from here on out is the Cleveland Guardians, who've got a really nice schedule. We'll break each of these down independently, but after Cleveland is the Houston Astros, then the Texas Rangers, Tampa Bay Rays, Minnesota Twins, Kansas City Royals, LA Dodgers, Athletics, Tigers, Mariners, Red Sox. So if we'll go through them one by one, but if you've got a handful of guys on those teams, could be a good stretch run here. As it to break it down between hitters and pitchers, Steve, this is where it was just kind of interesting to me that the worst hitting teams, I think these were actually sorted by WAR, but worst hitting teams, 30th place is the Diamondbacks. And I think that's, you know, it's a matchup that you're not like running away from, but to be fair, in past years, there were those, the low hanging fruit, as you put it. And I feel like this year it's a little bit different because after them is the Reds, that we know isn't, I mean, they're struggling, but not like dismal on paper. And then the Blue Jays, who it's just been like a rough season, but you know, how often do we have a former World Series team in the bottom three? Then you got the Phillies, then you got the Rockies, like you said, which comes with the Coors factor, the Mets, who just got Lindor back. It's like, you know, the Mets are going to Met, but Lindor, Soto, like they've been an offense that historically you're not like targeting. The Padres, where Manny Machado just had a two homer game, so like there's a little bit of variables here. The Red Sox and then the Guardians, the Angels, the Royals. I feel like those are ones that, you know, historically you would kind of circle on the calendar. But any thoughts at a high level about the hitting teams other than what we've mentioned? And then we'll talk pitchers and then jump into the team by team and player breakdown.
I do have last 30 days up, which most of those teams that you mentioned are like in the lower half. The Mets are actually, you know, like the eighth best offense over the last 30 days. You'd find that hard to believe. They got a 107 WRC plus. Boston's been pretty good. Obviously, they just snapped. Yeah, they just lost after winning whatever 13 games in a row.
Yep.
And the Padres actually have been pretty good over the last 30 days, too. 120 WRC plus. That's with, you know, Tatis heating up, Machado heating up, right? So they've been a bit better. It's funny, the two best teams over the last 30 days and two of the best teams over over the year are the Pirates and the Nationals. That's pretty crazy.
Insane.
So avoid those teams, that's for sure. But on the bottom, over the last 30 days, Toronto has a 72 WRC plus. The Yankees have a 74 WRC plus and a 28% strikeout rate over the last 30 days.
Wow.
St. Louis is fourth. The Angels are fifth. Athletics are Angels are fourth. Athletics are fifth. Seattle, Arizona, Cincinnati, Royals, and Atlanta over the last 30 wow. days. And that's pretty good. Like if you would have like rolled that back, or not good, but just interesting.
Yeah, six or seven back, teams. Like, yeah.
If you would have rolled that back for Atlanta the last 15 days or, you know, 15 days or so, maybe before the All-Star break, that would have been worse. Like they're starting to do a little bit better with Baldwin heating up and Riley heating up a little bit too. And then Acuna's coming back probably over the weekend or maybe early next week. So, but yeah, it's just interesting. Like the Yankees are been a bad offense. Toronto has been a bad offense basically all year.
Mm-hmm.
So like Cincinnati too, like, it's also another one you probably still want to avoid them at home.
Yeah.
But yeah,
I think
most
it's fair.
Of those teams are bad, but I got that sheet up and
yeah, pull up yeah. last 30. Yeah. I'll go through the worst yeah. pitching teams on the yeah. season. It's Athletics dead last. I feel like some of that has to do with the ballpark factor.
What are you sorting by here?
This is on fit. War. This is on
okay,
war.
On war. Okay. Yeah. I'll sort by war.
So Athletics dead last. And then, and again, that's home ballpark, but yeah, 5.32 ERA. Yeah. Then after them is the Royals, then the Nats. So they're at, you know, it's a slugfest on any of those games. Then the Cubs, the yep. Astros, the yeah. Reds, Colorado, the Giants, the Diamondbacks, the Twins, and the Cardinals are bottom 10 worst pitching teams yeah. on the season for WAR.
Yeah, in the last 30 days, it's basically that just in a different order. It's that Royals,
makes sense.
Yeah, yeah, Royals, Cubs, Athletics, Houston, Padres, Twins, Colorado, Atlanta, Arizona, and Washington.
Okay, yeah, so yeah, Atlanta, yeah. Padres, but yeah, yeah overall, it yep. makes sense that pitching would be a little bit stickier than like just offenses running hot. But so, without further ado, we'll jump into the first team that we want to highlight, and again, on the Tankathon strength of schedule, the Guardians have the easiest matchups to close in. And specifically, this is more of like mark the calendars because in their upcoming matchups, it's somewhat favorable. Like you got a series against the Twins. It's at the Reds. It's against the D-backs. This is like three of the next four. White Sox are in there, which is, you know, medium. The Tigers are in there. But then from August 18th on, I'm just going to rattle these off. You got home against the Giants, at the Rockies, at the Angels, home against the Royals, home against the Blue Jays, home against the Tigers, at the Orioles, at the Twins, at the White Sox. Like those are some good matchups in there. And there's even, yeah, we didn't mention the Mets. I know that they're warming up. But overall, there's a lot to be found, which is funny because the Guardians, like I said, the AL Central historically has popped up quite a bit in this because they've been so bad in years past. And I guess it's somewhat true, but like you mentioned, the White Sox have climbed out a little bit. And the Guardians can't benefit from playing themselves, which is usually a team to pick on. But open to your thoughts here, Steve. We can keep it pretty loose. But for hitters, I found this kind of interesting, and they're all a little bit similar of a mold. And Travis Bazzana, Stephen Kwan, Brian Rocchio, all from like 35 to 45% rostered in Yahoo. but I know Bazan has been dropped in a lot of leagues, Kwan as well. And then Rocchio is just kind of, he just lives on the fringe, but Bazan has been warming up recently. He's 37% rostered after he was in a huge slump. I dropped him myself probably 5 weeks ago. Stephen Kwan, I actually added about a week ago, and he's been one of the hottest like contact hitters in the league, which he was one that just all season, you kind of scratch your head and you're like, I mean, he's 28 years old. We feel like there's such a consistent book on like the type of player Kwan is. It just didn't make any sense that he was struggling so much if from like a batting average standpoint, but past month hitting 352, he's got a few steals in there. Definitely feels like Kwan is on the bounce at 47% rostered. So if you're in a shallow league, I think that's a no-brainer, or in a roto league if you need help with average. And then Brian Rocchio, he's just been hot throughout stretches of the season. You kind of look up and you're like, man, 9 homers, 15 steals. Like, he could have a decent line by the end of the year. And he's been all right in the past month, just 36% rostered. On the pitcher side, the only one I flagged was Joey Cantillo at 59% rostered. Honestly, I was surprised that it's only 59% because he's been, I mean, he's a guy that we probably talked about last year on this show, because he's been a name that we've been in on for a while, just with the strikeout upside, and nothing's changed there. And in the past month, 36 strikeouts over 26 innings, 2.77 ERA, the 1.50 WHIP, not great. He might have gotten dropped because he struggled against the Pirates last time out. Across these names, or any ones you want to throw in, I know it's a Guardian, so you're not looking at a ton, but thoughts on any of these guys for watch list, or maybe rolling the dice, Steve?
I think the Guardians are going to win this division with how amazing that schedule is. I just looked it up as you were giving us all that good info there. They are the odds on favorite.
They're only a half game back, but
you know, essentially, like, if they could just win, you know,
almost 500 or more,
or just, you know, they have two of those series versus the White Sox in this stretch that we talked about. If they could win like two of those games, they should be, you know, as long as like the White Sox don't sweep them in both, you know, they're going to be in good shape with how good this schedule is. Like that stretch of first the Giants, at Colorado, at Los Angeles, first Kansas City, versus the Blue Jays, home versus Detroit. Like, this is by far the best schedule, and like sometimes, like with strengths of schedule, and this is probably maybe more so in like the beginning of the season, like it comes to mind just because of like the hockey schedule just came out for NHL, and it's like, oh, they're giving strength of schedule rankings. It's like, okay, like the teams that don't play, you know, the teams that won last year had, you know, the best records last year, don't play themselves, so they're going to have the easiest strength of schedule, right?
Yeah, exactly.
You're kind of trying to paint a picture without having the pieces. Now you really can tell, which is why it's important to do this exercise in the middle of the season, because you know what teams are strong and what teams aren't. You don't have those surprises like we hit on in the intro. And yeah, this is just an absolute juicy, juicy schedule. So really not much to add, but I mean, what is interesting is there are a lot of, especially on the hitting side, a lot of Cleveland Guardians that should be available. Like Jose Ramirez just got activated today.
That's right. Yeah, good call.
You know, Slade Ciccone maybe.
Oh yeah. Hey, I got one.
Is a good one. You know,
Angel Martinez, who was a hot name at the start of the year. And he homered in a rehab game tonight, just 14% rostered in Yahoo. So Martinez would be a great one, I'm sure. Let's see what they're saying. I mean, they're still trying to ramp him up because he only played like 7 innings, 6 innings on Sunday. So they're ramping him up. But I mean, he's going to be reevaluated to join the big leagues on the weekend. So I think it would almost be a IL stash with this type of schedule.
Yeah. Brian Rocchio, like, did you mention him?
Oh, yeah.
He's been decent all year. I think Slate Ciccone is probably available in most leagues. And a guy that we talked about, last year on this show, Colin Manzardo. I know it's been, you know, super disappointing. But he did hit a homer and a double today. He's capable of going on those power bangers, and with those opponents, I wouldn't see why that's not possible.
I like it. Yeah, that's it. I think that's a good start. Yeah. I mean, the rest of the team, not every team has like four hitters to target and a couple pitchers. Yeah. So I think that's a good one.
And some of these teams don't, you know, a lot of these guys are fully rostered, you know, at least for the fantasy relevant ones. The Guardians have, you know, they have DeLauder, Ramirez, and then like a cast of characters
exactly
that should be available. So there's probably, it's the best schedule, and there's probably the most guys that you'd be able to grab, at least for streams.
Yep. And I think, segueing to the Astros with the second best schedule, you know, this, you could ride the Astros until it's high time for the Guardians, like mid August, even though they're right around the corner isn't bad for the Guardians, but the Astros, in their next, what is it? Seven series, it's at the White Sox, at the Angels, home against the Mariners, a little bit trickier with the pitching, home against the Rangers, at the Royals, at the Twins, home against the Athletics, home against the Rockies. So nothing to be all that scared of. And on the pitching side, again, like the Mariners, good pitching, but bad offense, right? And nothing in there is really frightening from a streaming Astros pitchers standpoint. It's actually really like juicy, like you said, Steve. And it kind of matches up with the fantasy opportunity because hitters to target, man, the Astros, it's like, yeah, you've got your top end, right? Like your Yordan Alvarez, but then there's quite a motley crew. Like it's kind of a platoon situation in the outfield. It's like you could squint and say, oh, what if Cam Smith gets hot? I think the one that jumped out at me, and it'd have to be like 12 teamers probably, would be Isak Paredes at 55% rostered. Past month, he's hitting .298. I would say disappointing for someone who's had him as the first ever back-to-back chalkboard pick. A little disappointing he's only on 13 homers, but this type of a schedule the rest of the way and could, you know, trampoline him up to like a 24, 25 homer season. To me, Steve, it's way more interesting on the pitcher side because Ronel Blanco had some real signs of life in his first start back from Tommy John with 8 strikeouts and 4 2/3. I think the fact that he gave up 4 earned runs is keeping him off people's radars, but I had to like double take. He only gave up 2 hits and they were each a 2-run homer. So the line might have been a little bit deceiving. And Blanco, I don't think we've ever like been in love with him as a show, but you know, he's fantasy viable for sure. So he's there. And then Tatsuya Imai at 35% rostered. 3 of his last 5 starts, he's had 8 strikeouts, 10 strikeouts, and 11 strikeouts. And he was a name we were interested in coming in.
What are the other 2 starts though?
Yeah, oh yeah. I mean, a cherry bomb for sure. But just thinking, like, if you could get Imai against the Mariners, the Twins, and the Rocky Road, like that's that's a pretty good 3.
You're talking to a guy who was like fully in on him in the off season, so you don't have to tell me twice. But
yeah, and
you know, it's just you cannot, like, no matter what the matchup is, no matter who they're facing, like he is capable of going. Yeah, you know, that start July 1st versus the Twins. This was coming off of back-to-back games where he had 10 strikeouts and 11 strikeouts, double-digit strikeouts versus Cleveland and Detroit, pitching at home. You know, there's been the concern with, you know, different mounds and everything. So a place where he should be the most comfortable. I'm not trying to downplay any of this because it is difficult and he's, you know, working to get through this transition, but you would think it would be the biggest lock of the year for him to have a good start. Like he's finally turning the corner. He went 1 3rd, gave up 5 runs, had 5 walks and 2 strikeouts, right? Mm-hmm. You know, before he had the 11K and 10 strikeout game, he went 2/3 of an inning, gave up 5 runs, like couldn't get out of the first at the Royals, you know, who we were talking about being one of the worst offenses in the league.
That's
like
a good point.
You just have no idea with Imai. I do have another name for you on the pitching side, though. Peter Lambert, I think, has been scooped up in most leagues.
61% rostered. Yeah. But still, so that's not everywhere.
Yeah, he's been, you know, fantastic and like a great find for the Astros. Someone to keep an eye on, though, Miguel, and I'm going to say this right, Uyola. He's a big prospect. It's Ulloa. He was sent down to the minors earlier. He had a brief stint in the beginning of July. He went 4 innings, seven strikeouts, 2 hits over 2 appearances where he went 2 innings each, but looked really good, has some electric stuff. And I could see them potentially giving starts to him down the stretch. You know, and considering that's a great great matchup for pitchers. You know, he's 24 years old in the minors this season. He has a 32% strikeout rate, a 15% walk rate. So that's a bit tough. And the walk rate's been elevated at all points. So,
yeah,
there is some reliever risk. But, you know, and the fact that the Astros, you know, have been struggling so hard for pitching, like the fact that maybe they haven't given him starts yet is telling too.
Yeah.
To play devil's advocate there. But, you know, he's been an interesting prospect, has electric stuff. You know, we've kind of been a podcast, and just our philosophy is sort of to still bet on these guys that have iffy command and hope they're like Dylan Cease. But, you know, that's a 90th percentile outcome. But still interesting and definitely worth it with the matchups. Just a guy to keep in mind if he is going to get spot starts here down the stretch.
Yeah, that's a great name for the future in general. 7 feet of extension, great velo. Yeah. Imai is another one that fits the bill, Steve, on the whiff rate and the 14% walk rate. But yeah, I think those all are, it's like Cleveland hitters and Astros pitchers, I guess, is how I would summarize the first two. So, okay, we're just getting into the rhythm of it, but we're going to take our first ad break. We got another 7 teams to break down, and we'll do that right after this. Okay, so Steve, next up on the list, we have the Texas Rangers, third best strength of schedule the rest of the way in, or the easiest. In terms of kind of the sweet spot, it looks like August 10th to September 2nd. They're at the Angels, at the Rockies. Then they got the Twins. Dodgers are snuck in there. White Sox in Chicago. Then the Brewers. So that one's got a couple bumps. But on the way to get there is Mariners, Rays, Astros, Giants, Orioles. So it's not like brutal. Anything you wanted to add there before we jump into names?
No. Okay. But yeah, it's a little bit rough, I guess, to start maybe. But then I think it's like a lot of these, like, this Colorado LA Angels road trip that a few of these teams are going on is super nice. That's a great week worth of matchups for hitters, just to go from Colorado being in Coors to LA and facing, you know, whatever they're throwing out there.
Yeah,
basically, exactly. And like, who knows, like, Reed Detmers probably won't be on the Angels at that point.
That's a good point. Yeah. Right. Detmers and Soriano both come down to earth in a kind of a rough way, but with the deadline, it's like, who knows what'll be there. Yeah. And great call on the Coors being like smack dab in the middle there, because I think the Rangers have a little bit more of interest on the hitting side. Josh Jung was one that, just 37% rostered, been injured like on and off, but .294 average on the season. He's still hitting third every day in that lineup. Jake Berger, I feel like we talk about him once a month, which is exactly the Jake Berger experience. 22% rostered. Corey Seager, who's just been, gosh, just career low watermark, of course. 80% rostered, but an IL stash. He should be back in a week or so. And then, I think you wanted to highlight a couple, Steve, but I feel like these hitters, honestly don't get that excited about Rangers, period. But when you do see that combination of like, all right, Angels, then Coors, then Twins, like there's some spots in there where I would be interested for sure.
It is also a tough ballpark to hit in. It's extremely pitcher friendly. That's easy to forget just considering, you know, we grew up with Arlington, the ballpark at Arlington being probably the second best hitting environment other than Colorado when it was outside in Texas. So you just have to remember that. And as a, you know, whatever 30 something year old, you still have to train myself to remember that Texas is a pitcher's park. Mm-hmm. Josh Jung is banged up again. I think he's sat the last two games, but still a good target. I think Ezekiel Duran is a name to keep in mind. Over the last month, he's got 5 homers, 2 stolen bases. Jock Peterson versus righties is, you know, an extremely powerful tool. He's up to what, like 18 homers, I think. And that was after that was this year that he basically didn't have like a hit like the first 3 weeks of the season, right? Like, was that the case? Like, yeah, he started off so slowly. He had 1 homer basically through the end of April. And then was sitting on 2 for a while and has really picked it up over the last, whatever, 60 days or so. He's got,
There was a stretch where there were 5 and 6 games, I think. Yeah.
14 of his 17 homers have come, essentially since the calendar turned to like, June. So he's been really good recently and obviously is like sort of a must start versus any righty.
Where's he hitting? Let me look up real quick where he's
hitting. He leads off.
Yeah, that's bizarre. There's so many solo shots. It's a shame. That 5 homer in 6 games or whatever it was, all but one were solo shots, which sucks. But
is that pretty permanent? I could be talking. Yeah, no, he's been lead off. It's a shame that they've faced 4 lefties over the last 14 days, but when he's in versus righties, he leads off. That's nice extra at bats there for Peterson.
Talk to me about your deep call here.
Okay, Cam Cawley is the deep call here. He's kind of a short side platoon guy, so it's slim pickings here. But he's been pretty good in those short stints over the last
homered tonight.
Yeah, he homered tonight. He's got 8 homers and 29 steals in AAA this year. He has shortstop, second base, and outfield eligibility in a lot of places. Mm-hmm. And you know, as sort of, it's so tough because with the extended wild card now, you don't know exactly who's out of it. So it's like, okay, you could sort of tell yourself maybe they'll give this guy who's young and a decent prospect, he was a 3rd round pick in Pauly, a chance here versus righties. But the Rangers are 51-51 and leading their division, not only in the wild card race. So it's a bit tough there to just say, okay, let's, you know, try to have this
experiment,
semi-prospect experiment, you know?
Good point.
And it's Cam Cawley, excuse me. I think I called him Pauly for a second. It's Cam Cawley, C-A-U-L-E-Y. It's
name to watch. I like these.
Yeah, a name to watch. He's been playing center field, second base, and has some speed and has done well in his limited plate appearance. It's only 34, but he's held his own.
I like it. I'm going to just breeze past the pitching, honestly, unless you want to stop me. Like I was squinting, you know, Kumar Rocker's been a little bit better, but maybe if you want to hit. So Jordan Montgomery and Cody Bradford both making rehab starts. Would they just kind of roll right into the rotation? I'm guessing.
I think so. I mean, the Rangers, they're leading the division. Yeah. And They really haven't been good, right?
Like, was Cody Bradford TJ? We were real excited about him last time we saw him. Okay.
So yeah, I think these guys both were Tommy John. Let me see what.
Because I think it was going into last year, Cody Bradford was one that we were all pretty excited about with the extension, everything. And then he didn't put up an inning in 2020.
Bradford was internal brace and Jordan Montgomery was straight Tommy John. Cody Bradford had it essentially 13 months ago. He had it in June last year, and then Montgomery was April of last year. So that's why the little bit longer return. But yeah, I
of those two, would you prefer the ceiling of Bradford or the floor of J-Mont?
I think I would prefer Jordan Montgomery just because there's more of a track record and we sort of know what he is. It's like a Toby plus, right? Like there's stretches where he's really good. I was a big Montgomery fan when he was with the Yankees. But yeah, I could see him sliding in potentially for Rocker. I don't know, Rocker's been good, but Kyle Quantrill's their fifth starter right now. So there's definitely a spot up for grabs. And like a lot of these teams like do six-man rotations, even if they're not saying they're six-man rotations, right? Like,
yeah,
I forget who it was on what podcast that I was listening to, but like, basically they mentioned like how one pitcher that you wouldn't think of, like, it was the first time that they made a start on 5 days rest like all year. So like, teams go about finding starts and days off for pitchers more so than you think. So both of them, if they're healthy, will make starts here down the stretch. And there's good opportunities too, just because of the schedule and because of how pitcher friendly that ballpark is.
Dude, Bradford's a good call though. I just put him on my watch list, but he fits the bill perfectly for the southpaw with the tight changeup.
Yeah.
Like his changeup had 34% whiff rate in 2024, 7'1" of extension. Doesn't throw hard or anything, but like really good control and just a big pitcher. So that last we saw him in 2024, it was pretty respectable, right? Like 3.54 ERA, 101 WHIP, almost a strikeout an inning. Like I think I would chase that a little bit, especially and just
Montgomery. Montgomery did get rocked in his last rehab start, and Bradford was good over the weekend.
Well, Bradford's 28 years old. Montgomery, like you said, is kind of the wily veteran. Yeah. Okay. Well, let's keep it rolling. We got the Rays next, who've got a nice run here at the Blue Jays, then the Guardians, then the Rangers, then White Sox, at Coors, at the Mariners, at the Athletics. They've also got a couple sprinkled in there of like Nationals, Tigers, Royals, Angels, White Sox. Like there's not a, for being AL East and like historically you're like worried about the home stretch. This is looking pretty good. Actually the Blue Jays, there's two series kind of bookending this. So plenty of interest on the matchups. From the hitter's side, just because all their platoon games, it's tough to get too pumped unless there's somebody that comes to mind for you, Steve. Like, I came close to putting a bid in on Victor Mesa Jr. because he's been a little bit hotter lately. I don't know if that's one you want to hit on, but other than that, I would rather talk about pitching. All right, talk to me about Victor Mesa
Jr. Yeah, he's playing most days. He did start versus a lefty in the last week. In the last 30 days, got 6 homers, 3 steals, and a 930 OPS. Like, this was a guy who was a pretty big prospect back in the day. And
still just 24.
Still just 24. Leave it to the Rays to find, like, another guy here. But, yeah, I'm definitely interested in Victor Mesa. I would imagine he's going to sit. Like, you know, the Rays do –
like a Ronda where they sit him against lefties.
It's not like once he starts versus lefties, like, oh my God, here it is. It's like, they'll do it like in spurts here. It's like semi platoons. Yeah, exactly. A Ronda is like a perfect example. Like, it's like, all right, he doesn't sit every time, but it's most, But yeah, there's good bat speed here. The strikeout rate is palatable at 23%. He's walking at 11% of the time, a 12% barrel rate. Like this is pretty good. And he had some, you know, decent grades as a prospect.
Homers in his last three games, I guess is burying the lead. I didn't realize still going to the game log. So
Mesa
is a good one. On the pitcher side, let's talk about Ian Seymour a little bit, because we haven't as much as the industry has. And there was a moment like 3 or 4 weeks ago where he was kind of like the it guy, where he had, you know, 7 Ks against the Royals, then 8 Ks against the Royals again, and then 12 Ks against the Yankees. He's been a little rocky in terms of run prevention, where most of his starts, it's ballooned from an ERA standpoint. So in the month of July, the ERA has been 6.11, but that's 27 strikeouts over 17 and two thirds. You trust the Rays kind of blindly, and he's a guy that's got good swing and miss stuff. Anything worth chasing here, given the schedule? Or I guess there is like at Coors mixed in there. So I don't know. Just curious if you think Ian Seymour's a target.
Yeah. I'm sort of was like hoping that he got dropped with these last two starts, just considering the strikeout upside that he has. You know, it does seem like maybe it was a bit of like a shooting star type of thing with those three starts. Two of them being versus the Royals, and then the 12 strikeout game versus the Yankees. And we talked about how the Yankees offense really the last month without Judge has been pretty brutal. That being said, just knowing his home ballpark, home team, and the schedule, if he's out there, I would still definitely be interested. This next start at Toronto and then home versus Texas are particularly enticing.
Yeah, another swatch, change-ups, 37% whiff rate. Pretty deep arsenal, too. Throws four pitches pretty regularly. Like, he's one that you would just trust. I guess a name for the offseason, at the least, that the Rays will find a way to make a 27-year-old with this many weapons work. So, I'm interested there. I think when we get to the end of this show, Steve, I want to come back at all the pitching targets, because hitters, it's like you stream them, you drop them, like it's almost like the whole league.
You hold on to them if it does well, right?
It's almost like the whole league is sharing the carousel of these Brian Rocchios, but when it comes to pitchers, it's a little bit more territorial, where like you hold on to these guys. So I think it'd be good to come back at the end and just maybe even rank some of these pitcher names. So jumping to the next team, which is the Twins. And yeah, they've got the Athletics, then the Marlins, at the Royals, mixed in there, like the Guardians, another series against the Athletics, another series against the Guardians, another series against the Guardians, Tigers, White Sox. So, you know, it's a lot of that AL Central, which again, it's like in the past years that's popped up. I had a hard time. My biggest like deflate the balloon was Kalen Culpepper, who I've, along with Luis Lara, which might have been a blessing in disguise because he's not playing regularly. But Kalen Culpepper was such an intriguing stash candidate, and he just re-injured his glute. So he was on the doorstep of getting promoted. But Ryan Jeffers is a good one, that just 36% rostered at catcher. When healthy this year, .287 batting average with a .950 OPS, hits cleanup every day. I can't bring myself on the other guys like Cody Clemens and Brooks Lee. I don't know if you feel differently.
Yeah,
but
I've been rocking with Cody Clemens since the All-Star break, basically. Yeah.
Okay. Well, there's some names. I mean, there's definitely some pop for those guys. Like Clemens looks pretty good under the hood. But yeah, that's it for the hitters. Maybe if you want to weigh in on any of those guys, and then talk about if you're seeing anything on the pitching side for the Twins.
No, I think Clemens is, you know, a boomer bust guy, but he plays every day and has decent eligibility and has good pop this year. So, and last year too, he quietly hit the 18 homers, right? I think that Clemens is actually a decent player. He had 19 last year. But you know, the hits the ball hard, has a 13% barrel rate, you know, 94th percentile exit velocity. So he crushes the ball. Yeah, he strikes out. He's going to be streaky. Doesn't really walk much, but he's chipping in six steals too. Like Clemens is a decent
Roto. Yeah, yeah. Just yeah. Like fill up the stat sheet.
Power, speed, fill up the lineup. Has mm-hmm. good eligibility. 784 OPS and in the 354 plate appearances he has this year is pretty good.
Yeah, it often hits near the top of the lineup, 41% rostered.
Pulls the ball in the air. Like this is he's going to hit you dingers. That's what's going to happen. There's going to be over five nights, but he's going to hit home runs. And with this schedule, I think it's worth having. Jeffers though, is he going to be a Twin? Is the question, right? The Yankees have been sort of throwing that out there that they've been interested in him for basically a few weeks now, even when he was injured. So I think he may get moved at the deadline, just because a lot of teams in contention may need catchers, and Jeffers, I think he's on an expiring deal. So just maybe stick to the Cody Clemens, Brooks Lee.
Yeah,
Luke Kuechel, I think, has been a little bit better too, right? Recently, I could be wrong there. I'll pull up.
He's an interesting one, and for roster percent too, 58%. Yeah, yeah, you're right. Yeah, last month, 283, 817. Gosh, you would wish he was running more, but I guess he's got 12 steals on the season.
Yeah, so, yeah. Trevor Larnach too is a 968 OPS over. Over the last 30 days, it is only 69 plate appearances, so he isn't playing every day. There's some opportunity there. Brooks Lee too. I mean, he's quietly put together a decent stretch here with three home runs and an 848 OPS with three steals over the last month. Whenever I look at Brooks, I'm like, he has 15 home runs already. Like, I did not realize that that's the case, and it's still been a pretty meh overall season, but.
I feel like that's today. The Twins. It's almost like there's so many of these guys that I just like blend them together in my head.
They're all very similar. They're all very similar. Even Josh Bell, right? He hits third, has 13 homers. Like the Twins are like, okay, when they have like a 7-game week, like you can comfortably stream any of these
guys.
6-game weeks. Yeah. Yeah.
Yep. Anything you want to add on the pitchers for the Twins?
Connor Prillip. Just had a rehab start over the weekend. It was only 32 pitches, but he pitched well, so maybe he needs one more. But it
he's
is kind of pretty nice.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's a pretty nice, like, other than, like, the Nationals and Astros, and maybe, like, at Athletics, it's a pretty good good stretch. You know, there's the Athletics at home, the Rockies at home, or sorry, the Rockies at home, at Seattle, and then, you know, a few of those, like even like the Reds, like I know it's in Cincinnati, but those Detroit starts are pretty good too.
Yeah. No, so that is the Twins. Next up is the Royals. So keeping with the AL Central theme, we've got the upcoming matchups for them at the Tigers. Home against the White Sox, home against the Twins, at the Nats, not a good one. Astros, then Rocky Road, at Seattle, at the Athletics. Then you kind of got to skip a couple because the Yankees are mixed in there, although, like you said, they've been a little bit colder. But then they've got the Guardians, the Angels at Detroit. They got the White Sox again. Cubs and Brewers in there is a little rough at the start of September. But then at the White Sox, at the Twins, home against the Mariners, home against the Guardians. So, I mean, these AL Central teams, it's kind of like there might be one or two tricky matchups sprinkled in. But for the most part, it's like four out of five series are favorable. So for the Royals on the hitting side, I don't know, man. I mean, Vinny Pasquantino has been so disappointing. It's crazy to see him at 61% rostered. I know he had like a two-hit game yesterday. He's in one of those stages where you're just like trying to will it into action, but you don't know what to point to. And I think I was listening to Chris Towers over on CBS. I brought up a kind of a good point that it's like we're all trying to make Vinny P a thing, but really it's been across the whole sample size. Like he's done it maybe two different half seasons, and we've now seen Vinny P for like a decent amount of time where like we're waiting for him to become this fantasy star. Like last year, 32 homers and 113 RBIs. That was great. He had a half season before that, but even last year it was, it came in bunches, right? Where like
it wasn't 800 OPS. It was a 798 OPS.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. But he had a 10 homer August last year. So he's just kind of been a little bit of a head scratcher for a guy that we thought would be like a fantasy star, honestly, like top three, four rounds every year. What do you think?
I do think he's closer to what he was the last 2 years, you know, a pacing 30 homer guy, you know, should hit 260-ish and have close to an 800 OPS. And here's something that I think hasn't been brought up. I know that he had an IL stint. I forget exactly what his IL stint was for. Was it a wrist? Did he like get hit in the wrist or something like that?
Are you talking about this season?
Yeah, this season.
Yeah, hamate fracture.
It was a hamate.
In June, yeah, which is a power sapper, yeah.
Yes, but even before that, he missed games with his back. You know, part of the reason why I think there was a bunch of hype was because there was the World Baseball Classic and he was doing so well and Team Italy was the feel-good story of that.
Mm-hmm.
But I also think what came out of that was that he did not come into the season healthy because of his back. He missed games here and there for the back. I don't think there was an IL stint. But just watching games, like I would see Vinny Pascantino, like there was a game where there's a walk off and like he, you know, the team ran out to the field and like he had this giant wrap, I don't know, heat or ice on his back. It's like, dude, this guy is hurt, like struggling through it and like, you know, dealing with a bad back that I can't imagine how that is to try and be, you know, a good baseball player. So on top of that, the top of the hamate, you know, the World Baseball Classic is amazing. I love it. I fall in love with these guys and it sort of skews my fantasy opinion of them. Like I remember with Trey Turner that year when he was having like 10 home runs in the World Baseball Classic.
Oh yeah.
And one that's don't do that. Like the, you know, they're facing guys that, you know, probably aren't going to be in the majors or, you know, aren't in major league shape.
You're talking to the guy who grabbed Mason Miller in the second round, dude. I'm the same.
And then two, it's also, that's a lot of baseball. Like look at Ronald Acuna. Like he played so much baseball this offseason and Dominican, you know, in winter leagues and then the World Baseball Classic. And then now his hamstrings are shot. Yeah, I guarantee you the Braves do not let him play winter ball this year. Just watch. And then he'll go off next year when I don't take him in the first round.
Uh-huh.
But, Pat, you know, just to get back on topic, like he played a lot of intense meaning baseball like for another month on top of the season and then came in with his bad back and like, you know, if this happened in spring, it's like, okay, he just wouldn't have played. I'm not saying that's when it happened and this is the reason, but there's just a lot of baseball and I don't think I've seen it brought up. There's no IL stint. It's why like these injuries are tough to deal with and know as a fantasy analyst and just player. But you know, I just remember watching those games and like, dude, what does this guy have wrapped around his back? And like, no wonder why like his power is sapped and he's having a tough year because he's probably clearly still dealing with it. I would imagine that, and he seems like the guy that's not going to like make excuses, and go on the IL just to try and get right because his numbers look bad. He's going to battle through it.
Agree.
So I wouldn't be surprised if that was playing into it. You know, maybe some more soft analysis than and some speculation, but
no, I would not be surprised. I think it's fair, and I think it's fair to question like, can he come out of that midseason? Yeah. But you know, I mean,
sometimes,
I'll be honest,
like, he's just on my
waiver wire right now, Steven. It's like I'm having a hard time just blindly like pressing the button versus like, you know, some of the names we've talked about throughout the show where it's like, if you remove the name on top of it, some of these other guys could hit 260 and launch a couple tanks like some of the Twins we were talking about, you know what I mean? And if it was Vinny P, you'd be like, oh, three home runs this week. But yeah, fair, all fair. I thought it was interesting. I just brought up Isaac Collins. I feel like we've actually talked about him a couple times in the past 12 months, but 9 homers and 16 steals, 263 average on the season. He's been hot the past 2 or 3 weeks. Super deep. I mean, this is one that would be available in some of the industry NFBC leagues, but just a name to note. I think it's a pretty low ceiling, but wanted to throw that name out, and then wanted to hear you talk about Lane Thomas, Steve, because he's one that I constantly forget about, and he's been decent lately, right?
Isaac Collins, we brought up, I think, on the first show, right?
No, not like our first ever
show. No, this season. This season, sorry.
Okay.
The first show this season, just with improved bat speed. So
nice.
Okay. Cool. That, I mean, it's not like I would not even categorize this as a breakout or anything. It's just like, okay, he is a major league player.
Sure. That's sure.
But good for him. And yeah, he's been decent recently. But Lane Thomas has kind of become fantasy relevant over the last month or so. He's been in the top four of the lineup essentially for the last 2-3 weeks, and has been pretty good. Lane Thomas was quietly like fantasy relevant with Washington back in the day, right? Like he had 28 homers in 2023 with 20 steals. Even the year before that, he had 17 homers and 8 steals in 498 at bats.
He had that kind of flash in the pan, right?
Yeah, and it was like that. Most of that came in like the second half, sort of thing. And then had 32 steals in 2024, in 2024 with 15 homers. So sort of disappointed, I guess, on the power side, but it was still pretty good fantasy wise. The speed isn't what it was, but it looks like at least some of the power stroke is back. 9 homers and 254 at bats. And, I think over the last 30 days, he's had most of those. It's been 4 homers and 3 steals over the last 30 days. So close to 800 OPS. So I think Lane Thomas has quietly become at least streamable and fantasy relevant for the Royals here.
Yeah, no, that's fair. And a stat correction too on the Isaac Collins. I was reading his line last year,
okay.
with the 9. Yeah. He's it's been 5 homers, 6 steals, but, past 30 days, a 308 average, 907 OPS. So like he's relevant, but like you, it's closer to what you said, Steve. He is a major league baseball player. this last one, I just didn't have this, pitcher on the Royals, Lewinder, Avila on my radar, age 24, ground ball pitcher, and let's see. Yeah, sinker four seamer guy, but like decent velo at sitting like 96.4 on the sinker. And the slider is like serviceable. And with their soft matchup, it was just like, okay, is anyone on their rotation interesting? Last game, granted, it was against the Giants, 7 strikeouts and 6 1/3. He's just been all right, and one that I think is at least like a name worth keeping on the radar, because again, 24-year-old pitcher throwing 96 with some okay swing and miss stuff and a high ground ball rate, Lewinder Avila. So put it in the back pocket.
And if his pitches move, if you use that Savant illustration tool where it shows where the pitches move versus average, and like everything is outside of the average shaded zone, so none of those pitches move exactly how you'd expect. Like he gets more glove side movement on his fastball based on his arm angle, more ride on his sinker, which you wouldn't really expect just overall, versus his arm angle and similarly thrown pitches. So interesting name for sure, and definitely streamable in the right matchup.
Yeah, from last year to this year, his velocity across all pitches is up, like breaking balls up 2 miles per hour. So yeah, I mean, it's just a name to note, and you know, who knows if you see him as like a hot ad on the list, and he's got a two start week.
Yeah,
I think it could be a decent name there. All right, overdue. We got a few teams left, but we are going to take our second ad break and breeze through them right after this. All right, so Steve, next up we got the Los Angeles Dodgers, who upcoming games they've got or series matchups. They've got the Cardinals, the Reds, both on a few of the lists we've named, at the Brewers, not ideal, at the Marlins, not ideal, Nationals, not ideal. So it's like two good, three rough, but then it goes D-backs at the Giants, at the Rockies, Rangers. They close the season out with at the Diamondbacks, at the Padres, Rockies, and at the Astros. So, I mean, the Dodgers are the Dodgers. At the start of September. They close the season out with like the Reds, the Giants, and the Nationals, Brewers, but some favorable matchups. I mean, now we're down. We're not like at the best strength of schedule. These are now like, okay, they're the 23rd best, right?
So it's not like starting to get to the middle of the pack.
Exactly. Yeah. But I think worth calling out that Tommy Edman, 27% rostered since returning at .341 batting average, .926 OPS. Tonight, as we record, he had a triple, 3-for-4, 3 RBIs. To me, it just like we've seen Edmund go on these extreme hot stretches and then extreme cold stretches. This feels like, why wouldn't you, especially with some of the upcoming matches or matchups. On the opposite end of the spectrum, Teoscar is being dropped in a ton of leagues. He gets extremely cold and hot as well. But if you see Teo rattle off like a 2-3 homer week, worth looking at the matchups that are the next week, right? And jumping in. So anything you want to add about Dodgers on the hitting or pitching side?
No, I think that those two are great calls.
Yeah.
They can Teoscar too. I dropped him recently in the league, but he can go on month long heaters. Like it's not just a week. And Edmund in a different extent can too. We saw that to the start of last year, right? Maybe it is a bit more hot and cold and not sustainable, but like the Dodgers have kept him around for a reason and he's filled in the gaps, like, you know, admirably. And then some at times. So
yeah. And less mileage this season with him just coming back. Yeah, and it feels like he's had durability thing.
Remember when he first came up with the Cardinals, like that August and September he had.
Oh yeah. Nico Horner type of thing.
Yeah. So he's done these power speed stretches for a few times before, so I would not be surprised if that happens again.
Little shout out on the pitching side to Roki Sasaki, who we were kind of tipping on the last couple episodes. Is like, we might be seeing something here with Roki, and then he looked really good against the Yankees
hitting,
in New York.
He was hitting .101, right? I know the Yankees have been horrific with the bat recently, but his average fastball velocity this year, the last game was it was the 100. He hadn't been above like 98.8 all season, so maybe it was the fact that, you know, he had that extra rest in between the All-Star break. Maybe there was time over the All-Star break to work on something and tweak something. But yeah, it was 41 fastballs and by far his highest velocity. I am definitely interested in Sasaki there. You know, we talked about the tweaks with the two shapes of split fingers, right? The split finger and the fork ball that it's classified on Savant, you know, the slider that he's starting to throw a bit more since the beginning of May. So I think it's just a matter of time for Sasaki. And yeah, I mean, there was concerns like, right? This guy, like Sasaki was, there was potential for him being a guy that sat 98, 99, 100. during, you know, his peak in Japan, and when he came over, that's what you sort of wish casted and hoped would happen. And that kind of faded away, and there was some concern. It's like, wait, maybe he's not as ready. And, you know, you see some starts with like 96 average on the fastball. If this is where he's going to be, like, look out. I'm pretty excited about Sasaki. You know, this maybe you could come back and he'd be at 97, 98 again. And this is all for naught, but I don't know. Maybe there is something there.
Probably the single most like volatile. I think in the off season, Sasaki might have, of course, there's a lot of baseball to be played, but might have one of the biggest like min pick, max pick ranges, just because, yeah, there's going to be some truthers out there. So, I like it. Stay tuned. Athletics are next. Again, kind of getting in the middle of the pack, but a couple really good stretches. So mid-August, from August 18th to September 6th, they've got Royals, Mariners, Twins, Guardians, Royals, Angels. And then they close their season with White Sox, Twins, Astros, and Kansas City. So really some good stretches in there. I have a hard time. I mean, it's somebody who's like was excited and rostering Gage jump. It's like anytime they're at home, like that stadium is rough for pitchers. But I guess on the hitter side, that's a good thing. And Tommy White. has come up and has been hitting, not hitting bombs, but has been hitting. So I think he's a name to kind of look for and consider at third. 0-3 tonight, but before that, 2-5, 4-5, kind of been a singles machine so far, but available in most leagues, just 6% rostered. Not sure if you want to throw out any other athletics, Steve. Was tough to kind of make sense of who might be a target there, but worth noting that the schedules are pretty light.
And this is another one too. It's like kind of like the Rockies a little bit. You want all these hitters at home. That being said, like there's so many high-end hitters in like Langoliers and Tyler Soderstrom and Nick Kurtz, obviously. Jacob Wilson is someone that may be out there. He's probably picked up a bit more recently, and he's sort of had the average all year, but he's found the power stroke a bit. He's got three homers in those last five games, stole a base tonight. That's nice to see considering he's only got three on the year, but he's been good recently, so I would definitely keep an eye on him. You know, Henry Balti's shown some really good, like, under the radar, under the hood tools as far as, you know, max EV and barrel rate has not translated to the results, and he has been sitting a bit, but I would still give him a shot, especially during those home stands too. Carlos Cortez has been all right too. He's someone that we saw go on some hot streaks there earlier in the year, and Zach Gelof I think is a good IL stash. You know, when he's been healthy this year, he's been really good.
I'll never think of him the same after me trying to say his name seven times a few shows ago.
I won't make you struggle
stumble
through that
one. Cortez is interesting. Like his underlying stuff all looks really good, and he had that stretch where he was like hitting like 340 or something crazy. It was in April. Let me look at this.
It was like
in the month of April he had a 400 batting average with 1143 OPS, but the power has just completely disappeared. And he had some bad batting average. So like June was a 106 month, but he's back up to 294. So if you can live with the platoon splits, he should be a good batting average guy. So, let me see where his XBA is at, like 270. So yeah, Cortez is a good name as well. To round out with the Detroit Tigers, Steve, they've got right around the corner is the Royals, Orioles, kind of middle of the pack at the Athletics, at the Mariners, at the Giants, but then they've got that AL Central run with the Guardians and the White Sox. They've got the Guardians another time, the White Sox another time, Rockies are in there, Twins are in there, Blue Jays are in there. So they've definitely got a a mix of these lighter schedules. Of course, some of these teams, it depends. It's like, you know, the Mariners, it can be good for their pitchers, but
yeah, if you're at the Mariners, that's great. You know, yeah.
If you're pitching. Right. Yeah. So it is schedule dependent, but I guess just for the listeners, if you're these team names, if they ring a bell for, you know, as a tiebreaker for guys you're looking at, just remember that that matchup element can be super important. What stood out to me was Gleyber Torres returning. I know he can be kind of a points league specialist with like the high walk rate. You know, with him back, I think it's interesting. Where is he? I think he's hitting pretty, is he leading?
He usually
off?
Hits like second. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Let me see. So yeah, over 4-3 Ks tonight, but yeah, led off tonight, had two hits and two walks yesterday, but yeah. All right. I'm sorry. He sat today, so that sat that today, over
yeah.
four was yesterday.
Just easing him back in, yeah. Yeah,
yeah, but Gleyber's, you kind of know what you're getting there, but 42% rostered, so should be available. And then on the pitcher side, I thought Keydair Montero was one that I feel like we talked about him earlier this year when we were talking about Troy Melton. And Montero's just like, he's a different kind of mold with like the command specialist. Doesn't seem like he has like a ton of swing and miss, but he had 8 strikeouts against the Cubs in his last start in 5 1/3 innings. So Montero, like they've let him go 7 innings several times. He's worth noting. And then I don't know if there's other names you want to bring up here, but yeah, the Tigers do a decent job with pitching, so some of these guys could be streamable.
Yeah. Montero's been interesting. I was actually like intrigued in that start, but I think he like came in relief in like a game where they went to extra innings. But just considering that Jack Flaherty just went on the IL, Justin Verlander is still only playing catch. Like at this point, like I think they just want to get Verlander right for like one last ceremonious start as a Tiger before he retires. Maybe I'm wrong. Hopefully I'm wrong. I would love to see Verlander go on a good stretch here, but
yeah,
not even throwing on a mound yet. Like we're running out of time here. Jack Flaherty just got IL'd, so they need the arms, and there's Scooble rumors that are seemingly more and more likely to happen as we go on here, just considering, you know, where the Tigers are in the standings. They're 6.5 games back, you know, in fourth place in the division, and 7 games under 500. So, you know, it would be tough to miss the playoffs and just get the comp pick, if the comp pick even is going to exist this year, I considering all the labor negotiations that have to happen around that, which who knows. That being said, yeah, Montero should get a shot here and is a bit interesting. Ty Madden also got recalled up or activated recently. On Tuesday, he went 3 1/3, 5 strikeouts, 4 walks. Just maybe a name to keep an eye on.
Yeah.
Some other hitters, though, the Tigers, I think Kerry Carpenter's had a pretty disappointed season, as, you know, probably one of the biggest Kerry Carpenter stands there is. I would like to see him do well and, you know, at least go back to becoming that righty masher that we know and love. But it just hasn't been there, especially recently. But I think it can at any point. Also, like Spencer Torkelson's been pretty good, as at least power wise over the last month. Does have 19 homers. Not going to provide much else of anything, but will hit homers. And then, like, a lot of the Tigers are sneakily, like, a big platoon team. You know, like Matt Vierling, Zach McKinstry, James Outman, all these guys, like, come in and out of the lineup based on handedness. But Colt Keith, too, has been all right recently, despite that power outage earlier in the season. Over the last 30 days, he does have 4 home runs and the 756 OPS, so something to keep an eye on there.
Yeah, yeah. A note on Montero in this last start, ramped up the sinker use from like 25% up to 53%, and it had about a full uptick on velocity higher. So maybe it'll be a trend, but yeah, I think there's for a 26-year-old pitcher with the Tigers. And it definitely seemed like they were giving him looks when we were more excited about other pitchers. So they might've seen something that they wanted to develop. Yeah. Okay, so that rounds out the name. Steve, I do want to end by coming back to our little exercise of grabbing some of these pitchers. So let me compile here. We'll throw Montero in there. Okay. We'll have Sasaki in there. We will have Ian Seymour in there. I'll leave out Montgomery and Bradford because that's a little trickier.
More IL stashes.
Yeah. I think Lambert would be first, so I might leave him out, unless you think he wouldn't, but I think Tatsuya Imai.
Yeah, he's a bit more rostered for this exercise.
I guess we could put, just for the sake of it, we'll put Cantillo, Lambert, and then Tatsuya Imai. So at the bottom of the rundown here, we got six names. Rattle off for me kind of what order you would place them in terms of interest in adding.
For me, it would be one Sasaki, two Seymour, three Lambert, four Imai, five Cantillo, six Montero.
Okay. Interesting. Yeah. Yeah. That's, I feel like Lambert's kind of showing a high floor,
I feel like he's probably even too rostered for this. I don't know, I'm a sucker for the strikeouts.
That's true. I mean, that you might have just literally listed off, although Cantilla's been striking out the yard too. I think I have Montero last. I think I might go like Sasaki first is fascinating because I feel like I think I might go like Lambert, Cantillo, Sasaki, Seymour, Imai, and Montero. Is that crazy?
No, that's probably
I know we don't do
probably safer than
right.
Than
we don't anything. We don't have pitcher rankings and everything, so it's not as easy.
Sasaki first is a bit aggressive.
It's a hot take, but I like it. I like it. It's the upside play. All right. Well, that's long show. We've been running long, but great show. Hope you guys find some purchase in all these names because, it's always one that, and we'll recall it, Steve. It's like late August when we're like, who had big August or who had a quiet, hot September at the end of the year? And it's like, didn't we talk about them on the strength of schedule show? So, excited to get into it. But that wraps us up, though. Episode 221. We should be back next week. I know we took All-Star break, took a week off, but good luck to everybody in the home stretches. I know we're getting ready to turn the page in August. Steve, fourth place. I know you're right there pounding at the door. Hopefully the luck turns around for you on the home league. But any final thoughts before we wrap?
No. Thanks. Good to be back. Thanks for listening, guys.
Yep. Talk to you later.